Hey, this is Jack Berkowitz. I'm here with my partner, Jariah Favors, and we're here in Beechwood High School to talk about the Waco Siege. What's up, Jariah?
Hello, everyone. How's everyone doing today?
Alrighty, so let's get started. So to kind of put everything into context here, what we're talking about today is the Waco Siege, which was when the government back in 1993 raided a massive cult compound, and close to 100 people ended up dying. And while everyone remembers that as a tragic incident, most people don't know the social movements that followed. So let's get down to business here. So on the morning of February 28th, 1993, the United States government and a bunch of government officials led in a force of 100 people to a compound in Waco, Texas, which was occupied by David Koresh and his Davidian followers, who he had convinced that he was Jesus. Interesting stuff. So as the ATF agents came up upon the compound, they were immediately fired upon by the Davidians, which started a massive gun battle in which three ATF agents and an unknown number of Davidians were killed. So this led to a temporary ceasefire in which everyone kind of was like, hey, let's find our dead and let's take a break. Everyone get their bearings here. And as this continued, FBI profilers were brought in to try and get them to surrender. But what they didn't know is that these people were willing to die for the cause. They were convinced that the government agents were the army of the Babylon.
So the agents thought it'd be so easy to just try and, you know, they didn't know that they were willing to die for the cause.
Classic government doing something that they don't know about. But yeah. So the agents were preparing for all-out war, as were the Davidians. And as reported by the New York Times, the government was bringing in armored vehicles that appeared to be equipped with small cannons. So, I mean, they're bringing in tanks. They're ready to blow this place up.
They're serious at this point.
Yeah, if no one thought this was going to get out of hand, then they're just stupid. But that being said, as everyone started preparing again, knowing that this wasn't going to end peacefully, David Koresh came up with a pretty smart plan. He knew that everybody on their TV was watching in real time as things were going down. So he thought, hey, let's put all the women and children out front.
Wow.
I mean, smart idea. He knew that the government wasn't going to shoot into the house because no one wants to see the government ruthlessly killing women and children. Even though David Koresh is leading his people to death. But that's not important right now. No. So, as the gunfire started up again, tanks were brought up front and they started pouring tear gas into the house to try and flush them out. And didn't really work out too well, because after about an hour, they saw all this smoke pouring out of the building. The Davidians had lit their own compound on fire.
Wow.
And no one ran out, which is unfortunate because there were still many women and children in there.
So basically the Davidians took it upon themselves to go ahead and do what the FBI agents were there to do.
Yeah, I mean, at this point they knew they were going to lose.
Right.
So instead of surrendering, they thought, hey, let's turn this into a mass suicide. That'll make the government look good. So, they set their own place on fire, and everybody died in it. Every single person.
I would assume.
Yeah, and instead of letting the children go, because, you know, they're all innocent and nice, the mothers were like, let's keep them in here, because that'll look good for us. So, the women and children and everybody in there went up in the flames, and everybody died. So, many of you might be asking yourself, why did this even happen in the first place? Well, interestingly enough, the Davidians had been preparing for war for a long time. And a UPS driver figured out that he was delivering illegal weapons to their compound. So he reported them to the ATF, and that's why the government came there in the first place. However, this one fact is what triggered the mass anti-government movements following it. Because as we see today, there are a lot of people that are pro-Second Amendment. Now, this leads to a whole debate about gun control and kind of how it started. So for those who don't know, gun control started back in the 1930s, back when there were gangsters like Al Capone who had access to any weapon they wanted and were ruthlessly murdering police. So what'd the government do? They put in some common sense gun control, which is something we hear a lot about today. And what this ban did is it outlawed fully automatic weapons, short-barreled rifles, and silencers. And interestingly enough, the NRA supported it. As quoted by the head of the NRA of that time, "Protection for firearms does not come from the Second Amendment. It comes just from wise public policy." That's...
In other words, they're saying that these Second Amendment laws are... I'm confused.
The NRA was saying this is a good idea. We shouldn't have these guns.
Okay.
Which is, today we hear them going, we need more guns. But I mean, hey.
And I wonder what the UPS driver was, you know, just, I mean, he's just a regular UPS driver.
Yeah, I mean.
Just, you know, finds that out. It's nothing regular.
Yeah, I mean, it happens sometimes. But, yeah, so as time went on, gun control evolved, and after the assassinations of JFK, Martin Luther King, and other people, the Gun Control Act was imposed, yet another form of gun control that outlawed a few other types of firearms and ammunition. And once again, the NRA and pretty much everybody supported it because they thought it was a good idea, ironically enough. But then, following the Waco siege, and following the Brady Law, which was imposed by the Clinton administration around the same time as Waco, that outlawed certain weapons and imposed handgun regulations, pretty much all hell broke loose. Everyone was like, we don't want any laws. And that's kind of what triggered this anti-government movement.
There are a surprising amount of examples of these anti-government protests, a few of which being when... Joseph Kane and his son shot two Arkansas police officers, or the well-known Oklahoma bombing where Timothy McVeigh blew up a Texas government building, killing close to 200 people, or what a lot of people don't know, in 2010, Joe Stack flew a plane into another Texas IRS building, but he had no intention of killing anybody. Unfortunately, there's really only one example of a nonviolent case of anti-government protest that would have made headline news, and this was the case of Cliven Bundy. So Cliven Bundy was a farmer who, between pretty much the 90s and the 2000s, fought the U.S. government for control of land in which they were trying to tax him close to $1 million to let his cows simply graze on there. And when the government tried to come and seize all of his cattle and arrest him, a mass militia of hundreds of heavily armed U.S. citizens came in to stop the heavily armed government. And in a standoff that lasted a couple weeks, the militiamen actually came out victorious with no shots fired and no one ended up getting hurt. So overall, kind of what we saw following Waco was a string of highly violent, highly volatile situations in which what they called themselves sovereign citizens protested the government and tried to prove that we are still a government of the people. While all of these examples were either violent or nonviolent, pretty much what the American people did following the Waco sieges once again prove, just like when we declared our independence from Great Britain, is that we are a government of the people. Like to thank you for listening in from myself and my partner Jiraiya here. Hope you learned a little bit about the Waco siege and the bigger picture. And thanks very much.